They had a tiny one-bedroom house in Santa Ana, California, drove a 52 Chevy pickup, and along with their Great Dane named Dan and a little black poodle named Murray, they lived in a sense-streaming daze that seemed at the time close to what the perfect life must be like. But as with all good things, this too came to an end when our young man, turning older, pursued by the demons of some indefinable muse, decided to move back north now that they had their act together, saved up enough from living the right life, hands crusted and gnarly from honest work, body brown and beautiful from putting his muscles on the line, brain filled with the poetry he had written, the music he had renewed, and the dope he had smoked, knowing that it was time to become the contractor he had set out to become 3 years before, and that all it would take was one sizable kick to get them moving toward what he knew would be the fine resolution of his up-to-now raggedy search. He and his wife and his Great Dane Dan and his poodle named Murray, plus whatever else they had accumulated in the few years he spent working with his hands rather than his mouth in Southern California, piled it all up in the 52 Chevy pickup and moved back to San Francisco they had come from not that long before. It was then that the big shift took place and the unpredictable happened. Our now 38-year-old hero and his young wife, along with the dogs and the pickup, were invited to move in temporarily with his sister and her husband while negotiating the purchase of their Mendocino acres. His brother-in-law had the idea that our hero would do well consulting in the area in which he was a tested expert, sales, with his advertising agency's high-tech small business clients. Until such time, of course, that our hero settled down with his young bride on their Mendocino acres to follow his true calling. Understand, everyone knew that that was going to happen. Nobody doubted it. Full of the robust idealism that had marked his youthful passing, he was, without any doubt whatsoever, going to realize his vision. The 20 acres were all but his. It simply required the doing. Of course, there was also the contractor's license and the money, but no one thought that any of that would prove insurmountable. After all, here was a man who had lived a life that baffled good reason. Whatever he chose to do, he did. Whatever he did, he was good at. No matter that once he did it, he grew tired of it. He chose to do that too. To his friends and his family, he was, if not unexplainable, certainly someone to be noticed, at times in amazement, and at times with pity, but never without awe. Because who knew what this man was going to do next? And somehow, they all, in their own private way, envied him. Can you believe that? They envied him because he seemed so free. Despite the perpetual trouble he found himself in, despite his lack of direction, despite his whimsical and sometimes dangerous philosophy, there was no denying it. This man, although getting older, sometimes precipitously, was living a romantic adventure they write movies about, or if not that, a pitiful tragedy. By anyone's standards, he was living pretty close to the edge. Here's a guy on the cusp of middle age with a long beard, a young wife, two dogs, and a pickup, without a home of their own, living with family, searching for property they couldn't possibly afford, with hardly a thought in his head that anything was wrong at all with his picture, about to step on those moving stairs to somewhere that he was totally unprepared for. And take the step he did, and it was a stunner. He was, thanks to his brother-in-law's good intentions, suddenly set adrift in a world that could have been another planet for all he knew. In Silicon Valley, calling on techies who own businesses whose names he couldn't even pronounce at first attempt, making stuff he didn't even know existed. He was dumbfounded by the magnitude of his ignorance, and yet something called him to stay. They asked him, "How can you help me?" He answered, "I don't know." They asked him, "What do you know about my business?" He answered, "Nothing." They looked at him for a long time. He sat and looked back and just thought. They said to him, "Why don't you come back after you've had some time to think about it?" He said he would, and he did, because he knew something was there. Understand, here's a guy who had been selling encyclopedias to people at night in front of their television sets or on the dining room table. Watching their faces suspiciously regard him as someone who came out of the night, until he spread out the encyclopedia and the vividly colored panels that showed all the books graphically alive, the maps, the transparencies of the human body, the endless list of topics, of wonders the world withheld from them in their ordinary lives, the promise to their children, even their children to come, of education, of knowledge, of information, long before the information age had arrived. Here their eyes would awaken and lighten up to all these colorful pictures of what was possible, and now, almost within their reach, pending a decision. He had done that late at night, grinding away in front of Frank and Marge until finally Frank, with his last breath, would say sort of covertly, "Well, Marge, what do you think? Think we should do it?" And he would sit there, our 30-something hero, waiting without a movement, without a whisper of encouragement to Marge, let alone to Frank, waiting for the inevitable yes or no, either of which would turn him back out into the night to, if he was lucky, go another round at Ben and Mary's, with all the little kids hanging on the pictures and making messes on his laminated plates. To this guy, this world, this Silicon Valley was a miracle. "And I get to do this during the day?" And so visit them he would, all the while feeling stupid, knowing nothing about their world or their business or the little weird things they made there, the little black boxes with their arcane significance so far beyond his experience of coffee tables and poetry and music and framing and pitching and closing. This intricate little world of theirs that lived in some cubicle inside of their foreign, tight, screwy little brains. And yet intuitively, he knew that he knew something they needed. He knew that there was something waiting there for him, something his particular life had in some strange, inexplicable way prepared him for. Something only someone who had lived in such an unconscious, cataclysmic, totally disorganized, yet always passionate state, doing this and that, could fully appreciate. And it was then that the curtain lifted. The curtain between the world that was theirs and the world that was his. But most of all, the curtain that stood between himself and himself. The curtain that separated him from his life. It was then that he realized with a suddenness that made him giddy that while he didn't understand their business, neither did they. And in that one shuddering instant of truth, our hero was reborn. He discovered an entirely new life. And with the discovery of his new life, there came for the very first time in his life the beginning of some purpose. To never let the curtain down again, to never allow the curtain to cover what was hiding there behind it, that the world was nothing like he had believed it to be, that no one knew what he had believed they knew, that everything was just like he thought it was, a mystery, but that he wasn't the only one who didn't know what was going on. What he learned in Silicon Valley is that no one knew what was going on. It was completely open to interpretation. And his guess was as good as anyone's. My God, probably even better. After all, he had met Frank and Marge face to face. He had survived the worst of the worst confrontations. He had even been attacked by a German shepherd dog while he was attempting to make his final close, right across the kitchen table. Who in Silicon Valley could say that and live to tell about it? Yo, and he had even made the sale, walked out with a torn contract in hand and a check. Who said little black boxes were dangerous? Who said there was anything to fear, anything he couldn't understand? I stopped long enough to feel how much this story had touched Sarah and how much she wanted to ask the obvious question, but I had to finish, so I went on. And so that chapter of our hero's life was closed, and a new chapter opened. He moved into his early 40s and the end of his second marriage, which also, by this time, had produced a child, his third daughter, another love of his life who could not, as no child can ever do, repair a broken marriage. During the years that followed, he became about the best anyone could be in his new chosen profession. He learned the secrets he thought were hidden. He married a woman far bigger than the others, had two more children, fought battles with his ignorance at times titanic in scope, moved through one obstacle after another, wrote books, spoke throughout the world, built a great business, only to watch it almost fail, persisted in building it up again, lanced, jabbed, wrestled, grappled, laughed, sang, loved and roared, and through it all remembered one simple thing that meant more to him than anything else he had ever thought. The curtain. The curtain. Keep the curtain up at all cost. Because it is the curtain that kept him shrouded in darkness. And it's the darkness that holds out the light. It is the light, the openness, the clearing of all the obstacles to knowing that had become his true purpose, to be open, to be awake, to be available to what's really going on, to give up false beliefs. And for only one reason, his life was at stake. And that's the point, Sarah. It's not your business you have to fear losing. It's something much bigger than that. It's yourself. And that's what this whole thing is about. What truths are your curtain holding from you? What misunderstanding keeps you where you are, in the past, in the dark, shrouded in your limited beliefs, shrinking from the world, from the light on the other side of the curtain? Until you lift the curtain, Sarah, until you dare to pull the mask off the world's face, until you move beyond your comfort zone, you will never know what it is you are missing out there. It's you, Sarah. It's you that's waiting out there for you to find on the other side of the curtain. I know, Sarah, because the man I've been telling you about is me. When the curtain lifted, I learned something. That there's no one else out there but you.